Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
What were the things you worked on the most down there as far as mechanically?
Nothing, just make sure my shuttle was good. I feel like I've done enough so far mentally. I don't want to run myself crazy. Just trying to get healthy.
Middays on the Score.
The top of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Football. Join Coach Fitz and the 17th-ranked Cats this fall at Ryan Field. Matchups include Ohio State, Michigan State, and Iowa. Season and single-game tickets on sale now at nusports.com.
Carl Edwards Jr., he is back on the Cubs roster and part of the bullpen, as Joe Maddon usually does. Guys come up, and they usually get into a ballgame pretty quickly. Wouldn't be too surprised to see him work against the Padres pretty soon here in the Cubs' final three games of a homestand. Expecting to talk to Theo Epstein in just a couple of moments. That'll be one of the things we talk about, that bullpen, and how Joe is, what kind of tools, rather, Joe is going to be given to work with the rest of the way. Trade deadline coming up July 31st, of course, and if you're just kind of tuning in, or maybe you're not a big trade deadline person, there is just the one so far this year. Players acquired, after the July 31st deadline are not eligible for the playoffs. The old waiver deal is not out there for the Cubs for anybody this season. So it changes the calculus of who, how, and when you pick up players to help you.
And I think I saw this correctly, that one name that was rumored to be targeted by the Cubs was once again Terrence Gore, the speedster and pinch run specialist, but I think he's a Yankee.
He was just let go from wherever, I'll check it, the whatever AAA team had his rights. He was just DFA'd by the Royals, and you're right, picked up by the Yankees. So yeah, there is a pickup and transaction there. So you're gonna have to find some other speedster to take a bag for you in a big time game.
Yeah, he was a pretty special kind of speedster, though. There aren't a lot of guys like that. I mean, he doesn't need to take a bat with him, but when you can use him, like it was at Herb Washington in that kind of role, it's value. We saw it. I mean, the value is obvious on the base.
Sure, it is. Just with the Cubs offensively, and granted, without Wilson Contreras in the lineup for what will presumably be the next couple of days. It looks a little different, but the way the bats have worked some lately, I don't know how much you may need just the extra 90 feet. Luxury to have, to be sure, but I would imagine, you know, the Cubs are eyeing bigger pieces to pick up, whether that's, you know, something from the Giants, you know, plethora of arms. Would you say they have a plethora?
Oh, I don't know. I'm just a simple man, Ruapo.
So there's a couple arms there, and they're going to head to San Francisco, maybe take a look, maybe bring some scouts, maybe bring some players back. Who knows? But with the way this offense has operated in three against the Pirates and three against the Reds, I can't help but throw as much credit toward Jason Hayward as possible, because the guy working himself back into being a big-time piece has been one hell of a journey. And to come back from where he was at in 16 and 17 and become a real force toward the back end, it's impressive.
Theo Epstein is the president of baseball operations of the Chicago Cubs. He joins us now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. Theo, hello, how are you?
Good morning, guys.
Morning, Theo.
Morning. These appearances on this station have come as interesting marking points on the baseball roller coaster. You know, we were out at the ballpark last time we talked to you on a sun-splashed day in the bleachers as you're introducing a smiling Craig Kimbrell, and all is looking good. And then a couple weeks ago, I hear you on the McNeil and Parkins show during one of the troughs on the graph, and you're laying down the law for consequences if play doesn't improve. And here we are with yet another upstroke, and seeing that indeed they have come out of the break playing the kind of baseball you've expected. What's the lesson to be learned in all that?
It's just the nature of baseball. Always, you know, 162 games afford a lot of opportunities to play well for stretches and then underperform for stretches. And, you know, we've tended to follow some patterns over the years. This group of players, our group, obviously way more good than bad. But you know, we tend to limp into the break a little bit, and then get hot coming out of the break. So we hope that we can ride this second half hot stretch as long as we have historically in the past, and play really good baseball going forward.
So, Theo, a couple of days ago, you guys moved Mike Montgomery from Martin Maldonado. You're no stranger to having three catchers on a roster. When Wilson Contreras comes back, that'll be the case. He came up June 17 and 16. How much does past experience holding that many catchers on a roster kind of let you remain confident in having that kind of construction?
Yeah, I mean, we've been able to make it work in the past. I think this one's a little unique just in that you know, the reason we finalized that deal was because Wilson was going to miss some time. It was just, you know, something that we were looking into, because with the trade deadline rules this year, you can't acquire depth or you know, specifically catching help if you were to suffer an injury after July 31st. So I think just about every team in baseball is out there looking ahead, try to anticipate things that could go wrong and planning preemptively for them. And then when it was clear Wilson was going to miss some time, we decided to finalize it and kind of see how things went and figure it out as we go along. But he's, you know, Maldonado's such a pro, and he brings a lot to a team defensively. We have to manage it the right way, because Victor Caratini is also a really big part of this team and having a breakout year, and does a lot of things well offensively, things that complement the rest of our group really well. He makes contact. He hits good pitching. He's a good situational hitter. And then defensively, he's taken a step forward and has a really good rapport with the pitchers as well, and game plans exceptionally well. So we like the depth and the quality that we have. And Contreras is obviously, you know, one of the very best in the game. So we like the depth and quality that we have, and we'll see where it goes from here.
You mentioned after the trade that there was some other dialogue going on with it. This was kind of part of a larger many conversations, I guess. Any chance that dialogue can continue? Is that something you're looking forward to kind of continuing to talk about?
Yeah, I think people read a little too much into that. Okay. That we had been having dialogue with Kansas City. You know, you probably talk to 25 teams this time of year. Usually the division, there's not too much chatter going on inside the division, but we had just, you know, we've been touching base, seeing what they were trying to do, and we knew from those talks that Maldonado was going to be available, and that they were actually close to moving him somewhere else. So it just allowed us to react quickly when we did have the issue with Wilson.
How excited are you allowing yourself to get over the recent performance of Yu Darvish?
You know, it's encouraging. I really like to see hard work rewarded, and I like to see narratives change, and I really like to see to see dominant starting pitching.
Yeah, that too.
Because we have five guys in our rotation, any one of which is capable of getting on a really good roll and having a dominant half season, and having that one guy who's just locked down every time out for a stretch of time kind of really makes things work. You know, it takes the edge off the bullpen. You know, you're getting a little break from the bullpen. It can almost turn into a guaranteed win day, and that really helps the club in a pennant race. So in Darvish's case, he's just come a long way. You know, I think last year, obviously, he struggled to get comfortable and to find his way and to be himself, and dealt with some physical issues as well. And then early this year, you know, he wasn't throwing strikes. He was still kind of settling in physically and going through the final process of settling in mentally and emotionally. And he put in a lot of work to gain confidence. You know, he put a lot of work in the weight room to get strong and explosive. He put in a lot of work with our on his own and with our pitching infrastructure to get his mechanics locked down. And he put in a lot of work on the mental side of the game to be his best and most aggressive, most assertive self. And to see it come together like this, especially, you know, there have been sort of a few moments this year when he's responded to big situations, whether it was facing Jake Arrieta at home or going back into Dodger Stadium for the first time, or stepping up and when it was clear that no one else was a really great fit for that first game coming out of the break, which can be a tough game to pitch. He stepped forward, said he wanted it, went out and threw a great game, and you know, finishing off outings like he did with the big punch out against Puig with two guys on the other day. Mm-hmm. So it's just really nice to see him with gaining confidence, being really assertive, and allowing his, you know, really dynamic ability to come out. Now it's a matter of just maintaining that and finding some consistency at that level.
Joe was pretty clear early on that he was trying to find spots to pull Yu Darvish, high spots to pull him out of early starts. That's hard to do. How much of that is, you know, Joe's gut that you trust? How much of that is a conversation that you may have with him about how, you know, we as an organization want Yu Darvish to deal with a little lack of fastball command in the first half?
You know, there's always stuff going on behind the scenes that doesn't really see the light of day. Whether it's players that you're trying to help build confidence, or on the other hand, there are times that you're trying to test a player, trying to put him in a challenging situation so he can grow and develop and be exposed to new situations. So, you know, this is pretty much a running dialogue that goes on with Joe and the coaching staff and the front office for a lot of it as well, just trying to figure out how to put guys in the right spot so they can continue to develop.
How do you foresee second base solidifying, whether it's one guy or whether it's letting Robel Garcia have a couple chances to run into one before you use Russell as a defensive replacement? Where's Daniel Descalso in this, and how much of a moving part does this remain in your current trade discussions?
I don't really know. You know, I think it's impossible to forecast. I think, there's a chance the roster looks a little different on August 1st than it does now. There's a chance it looks the same. But so we'll wait before we answer that question for the long term. We'll wait and see, you know, exactly how things shake out roster-wise. But, you know, the players in the mix now sort of have complementary skill sets to a certain extent. Robel's a really good fastball hitter. He gets the ball in the air a lot, hits the ball really hard. Addy is, you know, the clearly superior and really elite defensive second baseman, and he's working on his offensive game, trying to get back to a place where he can pull the ball in the air and barrel the ball more consistently, and he's, you know, showing some signs of that very recently. And, you know, and then David Bodie's growing in his game as well. Obviously plays a lot of third, but can play second. And then Descalso gave a good at bat off the bench the other day, and that's kind of morphing more into his role at the moment. But you know, we'll see how things shake out. I think, you know, there's no philosophical opposition to someone taking that job through performance and running with it and being the guy, and there's also no opposition to letting Joe pick the guy who's the best matchup for their starting pitcher and our starting pitcher, and knowing you might mix and match during the course of the game to let the most relevant skills play at that moment in time.
How do you guys see defense at second base playing, just kind of overall and philosophically speaking? You know, some teams have gone to virtual linebackers at second base and shifted, you know, to cover up their defensive deficiencies. You guys have an elite second baseman in Addison Russell who can, you know, is essentially a shortstop. How important is defense at second base in this day and age?
It's impossible to answer in a vacuum. I think a lot of it depends on the nature of your pitching staff, the nature of the starting pitcher that day. We happen to throw a lot more ground balls than I think any other staff in baseball, especially out of the bullpen and obviously on days when Hendricks is pitching. So, you know, take that as an example. When Kyle's pitching, you know, you're going to probably see 6, 7, sometimes 8 left-handed hitters, and you know he's going to put the ball on the ground a lot. And left-handed hitters, when they put the ball on the ground, tend to do it on the right side of the infield. So I think you prioritize second base that day. You also, you know, you may not want to overshift a ton on those days. And Joe doesn't, you know, the way we run things, we do sort of more subtle shifting than complete overshifting a lot of times. You don't want to sort of make a target for left-hand hitters on the offside and get them into a good approach against Kyle when you want them rolling over to the right side a lot of times. So, on those days, you're going to prioritize second base defense. If you've got a strikeout pitcher like Darvish throwing or a fly ball pitcher like Quintana throwing, or you know you're going to be facing a ton of right-handed hitters or a team that hits the ball in the air a lot or a pull-heavy right-handed lineup, it's not quite as important. So it depends on context.
That makes sense.
What are the current return timetables for Cole Hamels, Brandon Morrow, and Contreras?
Cole Hamels threw a good bullpen the other day. He's throwing another one in a couple of days. He continues to feel great. So it's just a question of sort of, you know, how extensive those pens are, and then when we transition them into game action. But his return is, as long as things continue to go well, is not too far away. There's a couple of different dates we're playing with. But you'll see him soon. I know that's not a real definitive answer, but you know, you'll see him. It's certainly, you know, we don't think it'll be too deep into August at all before you see him. And then Wilson Contreras, all goes well. I think he's completing either today or tomorrow is going to be his last day, completely off his feet, and then he'll resume baseball activities. But we expect that to be the minimum stay or close to the minimum stay on the injured list. And then I think you asked about Morrow. Was that the third one?
Yes.
Yeah, he threw a live BP down in Arizona a couple days ago, or actually yesterday, I think it was, and it went well. He did it with sort of controlled effort. It wasn't maxing out, trying to reach the upper end of his velo, but he felt great and threw really well. So that was a really encouraging step, and he's going to repeat that and throw another live BP in a few days, and we'll get a better feel where it is from there. But we'll have a progression where he ramps up and takes it from, you know, live BP into games down in Arizona, and we'll make a plan from there. But this is as encouraged as we've been, you know, in a while now that he's gotten through that step of facing live hitters.
You mentioned earlier how much you, just as a fan and an executive, I imagine, enjoy some of these redemptive stories. And I think it's especially when they're expensive redemptive stories. And one of those in you, Darvish, is it helps. People say, why do you spend all that money? Well, that's why, because right. this has been in there the whole time. I watched the Jason Hayward plate appearance very, very closely a couple of days ago when he kept fouling off some tough pitches down the line, some hard, mm-hmm. dangerous foul balls. And it's just watching him this year, his body language, his approach, he's out. How do I explain this? In that he's in charge of his at-bats, where he's acting instead of reacting. He's dictating things instead of just waiting. And for a baseball observer, it's a tangible thing. You know it when you see it, and it's just great to see from him that he's more in charge of some of these moments.
Yeah, that's well said. You know, with someone like Jason, even when he's struggling, he sees the ball extremely well. So he sees it out of the hand. He can recognize spin. He's just got a feel for what's a ball and a strike. He's got really good hand-eye coordination. So he sees the ball really well. And so when he's scuffling, it's you know, usually something with feel or swing or mechanics that creates holes or creates spots where pitchers know they can go for a soft contact or a rollover or, you know, to avoid the barrel. And that's why, you know, he's always been just a quick, a small adjustment with feel or swing path away from being a really productive player again, because that trait has never left him. Even when he's, you know, he's been, I guess, to use your phrase, you know, not as assertive or, you know, more passive seeming in the box because there were big holes that pitchers could go to, he still was recognizing really well. He just didn't, you know, his swing wasn't locked in to a point where he could do damage with it. And so now that he's has better feel, and with the barrel and his swing path is where it needs to be, you see sort of more than gradual gains. You see exponential gains because he is someone who's still just recognizing so well. So when you have a confident hitter go up there with a swing he's comfortable with, and he knows he can recognize spin and get the barrel there and fight off tough pitches, you see a hitter who's in control of the at-bat and doing a lot of good things situationally, driving the ball more this year as well, and just a really reliable guy who kind of picks up our lineup where he's been hitting lately, down around, you know, the sixth spot or so. He's kind of saving a lot of rallies and situations with his ability to put the ball in play and get the big hit.
Theo, last you talked with Mack and Parkins, I think you were just about to have a conversation with Ben Zobrist. How did it go? Are things still, is the timeline still essentially on Ben?
Yeah, we're going to know something more in about a week, and that'll be when it's, you know, time to ultimately make a decision because they'll need to really ramp up baseball activities or not. But, you know, it's still at the point where we are not counting on this at all. Ben's priority through this entire ordeal has been his family and has to remain so. So we are not operating under the, you know, strong assumption that he's going to be back and he's somebody that we can rely upon. But we do know that if it gets to a point where he tells us, and we should know this soon, that he's going to give it his best effort and that he can balance his priorities in a way that allows him to put his best foot forward and come back and help us, that he's going to give it everything that he has. So he's only going to come back if he knows what it takes to push his body, and he knows what it takes to perform at a high level at this point in his career. And if he's, you know, if he's able in his life to give that to us, I know he's going to, and that's a decision that only he can make based on things going on in his life, and he'll let us know soon.
How much leeway can you guys give that? Like you say, he's, you know, if he comes to that decision later, there has to be, I don't want to say a drop date for you guys, but he does need to get back into baseball shape, I assume.
Yeah, yeah, we've talked about that. That's okay. That's why, you know, we're approaching the point where he'll be all in, or it'll be ruled out through mutual agreement, because there's a requisite amount of time where he would have to get back into real full baseball activities and play a bunch of minor league games. So we're getting there. He's well aware of that, and we are too. And,
gotcha.
You know, as I said, we're not counting on it. So if we're not going to plan our roster around it, but if he does give us that word that things are will allow him to give a full commitment and come back, then, you know, as you look into September and hopefully October, that's an addition that can only help us in a variety of ways.
Lastly, before we let you go, with that in mind, what you're looking for in this current market, we know that sometimes these markets and the conversations are defined by that demarcation line between buyers and sellers, the number of teams that are convinced that they're still in some sort of wild card competition and those that aren't. What is on your list? For what are you shopping? Is this a possible leadoff guy, on base guy, contact guy, like a move the ball type? Is it left-handed relief? And how are the conversations going with the moved up single deadline?
I'd rather not, you know, get into our whole shopping list in too much detail. And a lot of that depends on, you know, how things are shaping up with our current roster, health-wise, performance-wise, moves we anticipate internally. And then it really depends on the landscape, you know, of available players. And there's sort of a, you know, a dream list of players where, you know, you'd love to acquire, but it's looking really unrealistic because either they're not going to be moved by their current teams, or the current team is going to set such a high price tag that is prohibitive for the whole rest of the league, or maybe just for us. Depending on the situation and what they're looking for. And then there's a more realistic bucket of players and you know, sorting through that, where, you know, you might have access to one or two moves in that area. And then there's the depth moves, smaller pieces, where you want to make sure you make moves that you can no longer make in August to try to game plan for every possible scenario that could get in the way of you winning the division. So we're looking at it through in all those different buckets, and, you know, you can tell by our roster. You obviously mentioned left-handed relief. You know, we currently only have one left-handed reliever on the roster, and we do have a couple guys with, you know, who have some experience in AAA, but if the right guy were there, that's an area. We've been getting hurt a little bit by left-hand, or more than a little bit sometimes, by left-handed hitters later in games against our bullpen, so that'd be a really nice area for us to improve and be able to neutralize. And then offensively, you know the shape of our offense and the type of bat that would help us, you know, sort of contact driven, on base driven bat that we could insert in, allow us to have a little bit more opportunities for the run producers in our lineup. But we'll see. That can be through internal improvement, it can be through some smaller moves, or it might, you know, if you can't access one of those bigger bats that are hard to get, then it could be something dramatic. But it's just just at this point, there's so many more unknowns, still knowns, and this seems to be the type of year where everything's shaken down and come down right around the 31st itself.
Theo, appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
All right, guys. Take care. Have a good weekend.
You too. That is Theo Epstein, the president of baseball operations for the Chicago Cubs on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. This segment brought to you by Arlington International Racecourse. They're off and running this weekend at beautiful Arlington International Racecourse. Join them Saturday for Miller Lite Saturday Summer Concert Series and Sunday for Mascot Day with a mascot race out of the gate. Visit arlingtonpark.com for tickets.
Got my Cubs schedule out here and trying to do the math. Theo Epstein said they're certainly not planning on Ben Zobrist returning, but that the possibility remains out there and that in about a week or so, it sounds like, they're going to have to make a decision on whether Zobrist can get back into baseball shape to help the team the rest of the way. Figure that means, you know, next week they're talking and decision-making. The week after that, it's kind of deployment and minor league stuff. Minor league seasons end, you know, at some point toward the end of August. So he's got to make some minor league games here next month, I would assume, as long as he's, or if he's going to play any kind of part in the rest of the season.
We're going to go through some of this stuff in just a bit and find out, try to discern. I think there were a couple little breadcrumbs that he dropped in there for you without question. The bottom of the hour brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Your Western Conference champion Chicago Wolves will open the season on Saturday, October 5th. For group and season tickets, visit chicagowolves.com. A very troubling baseball story is out there as well that we absolutely need to address straightforwardly.
That indeed. Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Keeping an eye on the Open Championship here, and when we cover that, and actually when I think about it, even just thinking about it, not even covering it, even just the mere thought of it, that coverage is brought to you by the BMW Championship at Medina Country Club, August 13th through August 18th, 2019. Visit BMWChampionship.com. Well, that's our first, I guess my worry about Wilson Contreras is he kind of burst the bubble on that I should be reassured that it's going to be the minimum stay.
Yeah, he was reassuring.
He really was. He's pretty definitive about that. He wouldn't give us a date on Cole Hamels, but it's...
That was also reassuring that he feels great and is throwing a lot. You know, whether the injuries haven't affected the Cubs as much as, you know, it's, some other teams have kind of, you know, really gone through their injury issues, but having Hamels come back would be obviously huge for that rotation. They've gotten by. Alec Mills is going to get another start against the Giants this weekend. That's the next road trip, right? Yeah, it's the Giants this coming week. If they just get healthy, they're adding a couple of things back while they're playing good baseball. That'd be a ton of fun. Though Hamels is probably a week or two out away, it seems, if not more.
And the Zobrist thing, it does appear that there's just, at some point, it's just not going to happen. Mm-hmm. At some point, you can wait, you can hold that door open, and then at some point, you just got to be like, all right, well, whatever. So I mentioned a troubling story in baseball.
Very,
and we were supposed to have Jonah Carey on at 10 o'clock today in his usual spot.
We've had him every Friday the last
usually
year.
Usually 11 or 10 with Theo on, we obviously move it. But we understand now why his phone was unresponsive. This is from CTV in Montreal, and I'm going to read this as it is written. Well-known sports writer Jonah Carey was granted bail Friday following an alleged assault on his wife. Carey faces four charges, including three counts of assault causing bodily harm and uttering death threats. He was detained Thursday after being arrested at the couple's Montreal area home. Carey was handcuffed and wearing a green sweatshirt when he appeared in court Friday and was granted bail. As part of his bail conditions, he cannot be within 250 meters of his wife and cannot carry weapons, and was given 10 days to get his possessions out of his home. Court documents state the alleged attacks against Carey's wife took place in July 2018, May 2019, and July 2019. His next court date is November 10th, 2019. I believe it's official now that he has been let go by the print outlet or the online
suspended.
Subscription
suspended. Suspended. Yes.
He's been let go by the score too.
Yes, he has. Yes. That was the next announcement that obviously it should go without saying that you've heard him for the last time on the show. And there's numerous people on Twitter, friends of his and colleagues and baseball writers. You can never assume what is in the soul of another human being.
We talk baseball with him once a week for the last year and a half. It will not happen anymore. That's despicable behavior. That's despicable behavior.
Yeah, that is there's no other way to put it. But that's it.
That's it. And that's all. Talk a little NFL. We've got some news issues in there as well. Ross Tucker, Radio.com Sports, is going to join us. Yeah, very good stuff. We'll talk a little Bears. Camp begins on Thursday. We're getting all football-y. Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack.
Of course I will. But we still got to get in our allotment of the number of times we can play that,
right? We've got a quota. Coming up toward the end of the month here, we got a quota to fill.
Let's talk some football, shall we?
Let's. Yes, absolutely. It's been a while.
Ross Tucker is the Radio.com Sports NFL insider who joins us now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from with training camps getting set to open next week. We got the news today, Ross, that Tyreek Hill is not going to face NFL discipline. It sounds like this was not an easy case for them to investigate. You know, they don't have subpoena power. It's not a criminal investigation. Are you surprised with this outcome?
Yeah, I really am. And there's several reasons why. Let's start with the fact that the district attorney said publicly that he felt like a crime had been committed here, but that he didn't have enough evidence to convict. Now, as we've heard from the NFL time and time again, they go by the standard of more probable than not, whereas in the court of law, it has to be beyond a reasonable doubt. So I can understand the Kansas City DA saying, okay, you know, we're not able to be able to convict him beyond a reasonable doubt. The NFL, though, usually says, hey, if we think it's more likely than not, then we're going to suspend the guy. And yet, in this case, they didn't do that. Now, if you listen to people, they will tell you that Tyreek Hill, that there's some evidence out there, perhaps, that it was an accident. And that, you know, it wasn't he nor his ex-fiance, the mother of the child, that led to the broken arm. I guess I would just like to hear from Tyreek Hill, and I tweeted this. Don't you guys feel like if people were accusing you of hitting your child and you did nothing, don't you feel like you would have said something right away? And I know people get legal advice and lawyers and stuff, but I don't know, man. I just think there are some things that are more important than that, and I would have made it very clear right away that I had not injured my child in any way. He never really did that. And then, you know, you hear the audio, and, you know, couples say stuff to each other, I guess. But you combine the audio and what the DA said, you know, the fiance saying that the son is scared of him, and you combine that with a previous conviction on strangling his pregnant fiance at the time when this child was born, and he pled guilty to that, it just seems to me like the NFL gave him the benefit of the doubt, and I'm a little surprised. I would think that he is the opposite of the guy that deserves the benefit of the doubt.
Do you think that the NFL's most recent issues with the with essentially conduct for players has changed the way they approach issues like this?
I guess. I think in this way, they felt like there was enough evidence to suggest that he had hurt the child. There's still an investigation going on, but based on the information they had now, they didn't feel like they could go ahead and discipline him. It's just weird, though, because there are other examples. Adrian Peterson, Greg Hardy. You know, Greg Hardy wasn't convicted. He was convicted initially, and then upon appeal, the charges went away because the woman would not testify. Adrian Peterson, we know what happened there. Those guys were both out a year as they were on the commissioner's exempt list. So it is kind of strange that those guys, in my mind, would be out a year and Tyreek Hill doesn't even get one game. I mean, I would think with his background and the fact that he was somehow involved in this and the audio that was released, I would think that would have been worth at least a game or two. But I also think the NFL thought, you know what? If we suspend him for a game or two, it's making it look like we think he did it, but we're going light on it. Whereas if they go zero games, it's, hey, we don't know that he did anything wrong. We can't punish him. Because if they only punished him for a game or two, I think they would get even more negative reaction than they are right now.
I wonder how significant it is that they said that it can remain open. They're not completely closing the book here. That if, in fact, she wants to cooperate further, it almost sounds like that is an opportunity to say, look, anytime you want to tell us what happened, that's really the sword of Damocles right now, is her testimony, is it not?
Sword of Damocles? That was awesome.
Hey.
I mean, you are well read. You do not mess around.
We're both English majors, and you're a Princeton grad. Quit screwing around.
That was very, very impressive. Right now, everybody driving around Chicago is like, Sword of Damocles. I know that one. Sword of Damocles. Anyway, no, you know what, though? I think they say that about every investigation now, just to cover their you-know-what, right? We reserve the right to change should more information come out. And I think that that's always just a CYA from the NFL, and we'll see if anything more comes out. I mean, I'll be fascinated to see how quickly the Chiefs give him an extension. You're talking about a guy going in the last year of his contract that's one of the, what, you know, two or three? He's actually by far the most explosive player in the NFL, but I would say one of the two or three scariest skill guys in the NFL for the opposition.
Elsewhere in the league and a little closer to home, our colleague Lawrence Holmes spent the All-Star Week, really, asking various NFL experts whether or not Mitch Trubisky was good. I want to use that as a little bit of a jumping-off point here and ask, Ross, what's the variable that's biggest for Matt Nagy and his offense? Is it indeed Mitch Trubisky?
Without question. You know, Trubisky's an interesting one for me. I watched a lot of Bears football last year. I really like his athleticism. He made some really good throws. Even in the Eagles game in the playoffs when people said he couldn't get it done. Now, they only scored, 15 points or 13 points or something. But late in the game, when he had to, he was able to drive the length of the field and get them in the field goal range before we all know what happened. I won't hurt the Bears fans' hearts again. But then there's other games, guys, and you saw it, where he would make throws, and I had no idea where he was throwing the ball. I had no idea what he was doing. It seemed like at least once a game, he would throw the ball right to a guy on the other team. And where I struggle with that is, I struggle with thinking of a quarterback that was able to fix that. Thinking of a quarterback that was able to fix inexplicable awful throws, you know, 3, 4, 5 times a game. I don't know who that quarterback is that had those in his career and then eliminated it. Trubisky, you know, right or wrong, feels to me like a guy that is perpetually between the 16th and the 25th best quarterback in the NFL, and that you can win with him, but I'm not sure you can win big with him, and I'm not sure you can win consistently with him.
Talking with Ross Tucker on Sports Radio 670 The Score. Ross Tucker is the radio.com sports NFL insider. I'm hearing all sorts of cool stuff about what's going on with radio.com sports. I know our program director, Mitch Rosen, was just with you in New York and is one of the executives involved in developing this brand new thing. What's in the hopper for you this football season?
Well, so Mitch is awesome, by the way. Mitch is awesome. Really enjoyed getting a chance to get to know him earlier this week. And I'm loving being an insider. I'm loving going on as many stations as I can. There may be even more down the line. Who knows? You know, you never know. But, yeah, for me, I'll be very, very busy going on stations all over the place that you can always listen to on the radio.com app. I'm also going to be doing a lot of college football. I'll be doing NFL stuff for Westwood One. So you'll hear me on the sidelines a lot on Monday night. So I will have a very full plate.
How does, on that full plate, I would imagine that checking in on one of the league's best, Aaron Rodgers, and his new dynamic with a brand new head coach has got to be a somewhat large portion, I would think. It certainly is here in town. What are your expectations for how those two work together?
I don't really know, but I'm fascinated because right now, I really think, guys, the Vikings, Packers, and Bears are all right about jumbled in the same place in my mind. I picture all three of those teams being somewhere between, I'll say 8-8 on the low end, but probably even 9-7 to 11-5. I really think Detroit, obviously, is in the basement.
Oh, yeah.
But those three could be in any order. I kind of think the Bears... You know, the tough thing is for the Bears, it's really hard to win that division, any division, 2 years in a row. I think Minnesota and Green Bay will both be better. I'm not sure the Bears are better. You know, I think you can argue year two of Nagy is a big way they'll be better. We know that they still haven't really fixed the field goal kicking situation. And I think that people might have a little bit better read on what it is Nagy's going to do. That was his first year last year as the play caller, so I think the defenses have a little better understanding now of what to expect from Nagy. So I kind of expect the Bears to come back to the pack a little bit and for Minnesota and Green Bay to be able to be, you know, right in the mix with them. I'd probably lean Green Bay. I just don't know what to expect from a first-year head coach in LaFleur. It seems like they're trying to have Aaron Rodgers do a whole new offense,
mm-hmm.
and Aaron Rodgers pretty clearly doesn't like when people tell him what to do. That's pretty obvious at this point. So I'll be very curious to see how long that honeymoon lasts in Green Bay, if at all.
I enjoyed your double meaning of back to the pack there. That was certainly nicely turned. And now what Nagy would tell you, Ross, is he would say, yeah, okay, that's great. They saw me in the first year. Like, they don't know anything about me. They have no clue once this machine gets humming what it really is going to look like. And he talks about 101 level courses now going to 202 and 303 and grad school stuff and being able to get Trubisky on the board. What do you see here? Where do we go with it? What does this tell you, this front, this movement? They roll coverage this way. And his response is going to be that he's always going to have the opportunity to get the jump on the defense because that's indeed how it's all designed. As we're watching it, what's going to be evidence of that, of him being right?
Well, that sounds good. And let me just tell you, I think I told you guys before, I've known Nagy a long time. He grew up about 25 minutes from me in Pennsylvania. He was a year older than me. So I've known Matt since he was selling real estate. Well, I know him since high school, and then I knew him when he was selling real estate and playing arena ball in Lancaster, PA. I would just say, KISS, right? Keep it simple, stupid. I think sometimes I hear these coaches talk about 202 and 303, and I don't know. We'll see. Can Mitch Trubisky handle 202 and 303. Are they as effective? It's almost like when sometimes you see second-year quarterbacks have a slump, you know, the sophomore slump, because after a guy is successful as a rookie, and I would say even Matt Ryan wasn't as good as second-year as he was as a rookie, I think after they try to pare down the offense for these guys when they're young, and then they have some success, let's build on that, they put more on the quarterback's plate. Sometimes those quarterbacks aren't really up to the challenge, and they're not able to sustain their performance when more is put on them. So that's going to be really interesting to see if Trubisky can handle that part of it. I really don't know much about his football acumen.
Last one for you, Ross, and just real quickly here, Ross Tucker, insider, NFL insider for Radio.com Sports, by the way. How excited and what do you expect from Hard Knocks Raiders?
I'm very, very excited. Now, with a caveat that the team always has the ability to sort of veto anything they want to veto in terms of the coverage, and I don't know, I'm pretty confident they didn't want to do it. I mean, you look at Mark Davis's quotes or even Mayock and Gruden, they really didn't want to do it. I don't know what favors they got from the league or how that worked out, because I'm pretty confident they didn't want to do it. But I think everybody realized they wanted it to be the Raiders so bad that they were somehow able to convince them. I'd love to know what those backroom negotiations were like, because it was about – they announced it about a month later than they normally do. So they were obviously scrambling and negotiating. I hope it's really entertaining. I hope they're open and they show us a lot. I really hope that's the case, because you want to talk about a Molotov cocktail of personality. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'd watch a show that's Antonio Brown, Vontaze Burfict, and Richie Incognito in a room. I mean, it'd be the Three Stooges reincarnated. It would be fascinating to see what those guys are like. So I'd love to see just that if I could.
Ross, great stuff. We appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Absolutely. Take care, guys.
I think we'll be hearing more from Ross Tucker, the Radio.com Sports NFL insider. The top of the hour brought to you by the Chicago Wolves, your Western Conference champion Chicago Wolves, will open the season on Saturday, October 5th. For group and season tickets, visit ChicagoWolves.com.
So we'll hear a little bit more from Theo Epstein. Cubs coming up in just a little bit. We'll play some of the most newsy parts of Theo in just a little. But we've got Lawrence Holmes' noon hour, at least the next 45 minutes or so. So it's an extended dance mix for us. You, though, noticed something. You and I have been peering as best we can at the bleeding edge of the baseball forefront.
Yep.
And something came to us from that edge over this week. You noticed it. I didn't see it. So you're going to have to walk me through this.
I'm going to. It's interesting. What's happening is there are people in baseball that are trying to wrap themselves in something and brand themselves with something. And now the people involved are saying, no. Don't throw our name around quite that easily.
Baseball's changing fast. We'll tell you how. Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.